Hey y'all, welcome back to The Score. My name is Callie Montague, and in this episode, I get to talk to Kaylin Helton, a Texas cowgirl who balances it all. Roping, a full-time career, owning a stud, and all the things that come with being a competitor in this age of the sport. Helton has put together one heck of a resume in both the team roping and breakaway roping side of things. Between being competitive at the junior and college rodeo level, up through the pro ranks and taking wins at some of the biggest ropings in the country, and now as someone who may not be rodeoing full-time, but still puts her whole heart into her program while also balancing a job as a professional counselor. In this episode, we talk about it all. The future of the sport, how important good horse flesh is in her program, and how her career as a counselor plays into the mental game side of the sport that we love. This is a good one, and I can't wait for you to hear it. This episode of The Score is brought to you by our friends at Cactus Ropes, trusted by the best in the world for more than 25 years. Whether you're trying out the new Cool Cat or picking up a C4 for the summertime, Cactus Ropes was built by ropers for ropers. Check out their full selection of ropes at cactusropes.com. Now let's get into the episode. Let's start with this. Talk to me about growing up and kind of the years, like, you don't have to go all the way back, but just the years that played into what you do now, who you are now. Like, talk me through that story of how we kind of got to where we are today.
Yeah, I junior rodeoed mainly, you know, growing up, and high school rodeo, all of that stuff, mm-hmm. and everything that came along with it. And then we only had like two big breakaway jackpots growing up for junior stuff, like the Barry Burke, and then Chris Neal had the Rising Stars, and that was about it.
Right.
And you mainly focused on junior rodeo and high school rodeo. I started amateur rodeoing when I was 15 years old, going to the UPRAs and the CPRAs in Texas and, you know, just trying to improve myself.
For sure.
That's kind of where I went. And then I got a rodeo scholarship as a freshman to go to Tarleton and rodeo for Bob Doty. And that's how I ended up in Stephenville and continued to amateur rodeo. And that's kind of where I am today. I kind of took a break from the breakaway world after college and really focused on team roping. I still breakaway roped, but there was really nothing to go to besides the amateur rodeos and some jackpots. So team roping had a lot more money involved, and I got to where I really enjoyed it because it was still something to do with a rope.
For sure. So then when did you team rope in college too, and like all through the junior rodeos, or were you mainly roping calves and then come back to the team roping later?
I team roped like for points.
Yeah, right.
I had a head horse. My dad would also haze on the head horse. So nice. Team roping wasn't really like the thing, but my swing, unfortunately, has always been a headers type swing.
Right.
You know, I really have to work on the angle to rope calves, always have, even from the time I was 10, 12 years old.
Right.
So team roping was always pretty easy for me to pick up. I could go catch. And
right.
my dad was a calf roper and a bulldogger, not a team roper. And he would just be like, just stay to the left.
Right.
And that was pretty much all the guidance I had. So I really kind of got into the team roping more in college, you know, with friends, and it was something we all did, and we could go to local jackpots. And I did team rope through college just because it was another event to do.
Right. Cool. Very cool. So you said you're a counselor, and we'll break down each one of these. Obviously this isn't like the only question I'm going to ask, but so you're a counselor and then you own your stud. How do you balance it all? Are you just the busiest person that walks? I mean, how do you?
Some days. Yes. this week's been a very long week. I'll be very honest. Yeah, it is definitely tough. My career is something I worked really, really hard at to build a good reputation and, you know, and to give back to people and be there to help them in some of their tough times. And yes, it is very hard to balance. I work 40 hours in 4 days.
Golly.
And still rope on the weekends and at night. Like, I work a lot of days, 8 to 6, 8 to 7, depending on what's going on, and then have to go outside and rope and everything. Do I feel like I get to put the effort into practicing as I want to? No, I don't. Some days I'm mentally exhausted, and
right.
the thought of going to the arena is just not what I need to do sometimes for me. So it is difficult to balance. It's, you know, with the breakaway open the way it is now, I wish I was able to go, you know, like those girls do, but my career comes first,
For
and
sure.
I get to go rodeo plenty when I want to, mainly circuit rodeo. I like to go up north on the 4th of July. I've gotten to go to Fort Worth, San Antonio, Houston. I got to go to all those in the beginning, so I've had the experiences. But yeah, I put my career first. And if the breakaway had blown up 15 years ago, maybe my story would have been a little bit different. But right now, my career comes first. And I can team rope all the time. I can go across the street from my house and team rope almost every weekend if I wanted to,
For
you know.
sure.
And they're mostly on the weekends. And that's the hard part about it for me with the breakaway is a lot of stuff is during the week, and I just can't make it work. And it's just a choice I've made, and I'm okay with it.
Cool. Yeah, that's something that I want to talk more about on the breakaway side, because there are so many women that have careers now that are going, because it's just gotten so big, like you can't ignore it, right? Like you
No.
can't not go, and you can't take advantage of where it's headed. But all these women had careers first. I mean, you have there's so many cool women out there that are had they're counselors and they're teachers and they're nurses and they're, name it what they are, but they're like, man, this money's too good. We can't not go. So that's kind of something I want to highlight a lot of that, because that's tough. Like it's a dream versus a career, and not say you can't make a career out of roping calves. I'm not saying that, but when you already had this established career and then it blew up, like what are we doing about it? How are we handling it? So.
And my career that I chose is very mentally taxing, but I love it. I don't know what else I would do. And to be a licensed professional counselor in the state of Texas, you have 300 hours while you're in grad school, and then you take your state boards, and then you have to do 3,000 internship hours before you get
Holy
your actual
moly.
license.
That's crazy.
So to get that actual license was an accomplishment in itself.
For
And then,
sure.
now I work for a company out of Rockwall, Texas called Mindful Health, and I am a virtual therapist. So I do work from home, and I changed from the hospital to this company because I did have more, ability to be like, hey, I need to be gone Wednesday afternoon to the US finals next week. I can do that. Like, I can work Friday afternoon and make it up and not have to take off. And I do. When I go rodeo over the summer for a couple of weeks, I take my computer, and on the downtime, I sit in the trailer and I see clients. So I do have that flexibility now, which is amazing, but it's hard working on the road. It's
For
hard
sure.
finding service everywhere. It's hard,
That's the worst.
making everything work. Like, and I just have to pick and choose and make sure work is taken care of because those people's mental health depends on me in some sort.
I'm
So
sure.
it, and I've learned, I let rodeo be such a huge part of my life growing up that I have a whole new respect for things working in mental health now that, hey, breaking that barrier is not that big a deal, or, missing that calf, or, waving it off in the short round. It hurts, but it's not that big a deal. So I get to do this for fun. This is a hobby. And I think it really helped my mindset on roping
For sure.
in this career.
For sure. Well, so let's build on that. I was going to go into the breakaway stuff, but I want to talk to you about your career. So like, how did that come about? Was that something you always wanted to do? What, how did you land in that?
No, actually, I went to college as a business major. And I took psychology 101 because it was a required class and just kind of fell in love with it. And I've always been the person people have come to. When I've always been that type of personality, that person, always help the best I can and always care about people. And I got involved in it. So I ended up, my bachelor's is in psychology and my master's is in education and counseling. And in that way, if you took a couple extra classes, you could be a licensed professional counselor like I am, or I could also go be a school counselor. I could do either. So, but I didn't want to go into the school system and really wanted to do like individual counseling. So,
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, I was gonna ask you if you'd ever like worked in the school system at all.
I had to do an internship in the school system, and it just really wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to do actual counseling and not be involved in like scheduling and STAR tests and all that kind of stuff. So
Yeah, they have counselors doing, I mean, like my counselor got me my college scholarships. I mean, like we,
Exactly. And I think that's amazing. And yeah, I
right.
can always go back and do that. Yeah, but that's not where my passion was.
Right. Gotcha. So I can only imagine that that's, I mean, you've already said it, but how like mentally taxing that is. But how do you think it's helped your mental game on the roping side? Do you think it's helped or do you think it's hurt it? Because now you are so, I mean, I know you said like, the barriers really don't matter and the short rounds, I mean, while they're cool to win or whatever, they're not all ending. But like, how else has it helped your mental game on the roping side?
I think it's helped my mental game a lot. I mean, obviously, I have techniques and tips because I do get in my head sometimes.
Right.
I always have. I have anxiety. I always have. I didn't know what it was, in junior high and high school, but
Of
that's
course.
what it was. And, now I have things that kind of help me. The biggest thing that helps me is just keeping myself and my horses in a routine. And each horse may have a different routine, but as long as I keep them there and in their routine, they stay grounded and it keeps me grounded.
Cool.
So, and that's kind of, I think it's helped my mental game a lot. The only thing it has hurt is sometimes I'm just mentally exhausted and I'm
Yeah.
like, I'm riding one horse, not three tonight. Like I
Right.
just need,
The
so
mill.
I
Yeah.
think, yeah. And sometimes I'll run out on my lunch break and break away a few if I have a break
Yeah.
and just kind of trying to reset. I always tell people roping's my break from work and work's my break from roping.
That's funny. So what's your favorite thing about your job baseline? Like what's, you're like, man, this is why I do it.
Primarily, I specialize in children,
Oh, that's awesome.
and they don't tell you what you want to hear sometimes. They tell you the truth, and and just seeing if I can make a difference. And they haven't had a lot of the choices. A lot of times it's the environment or things that have happened, and so it's just rewarding working with the children or seeing their face light up or. Sometimes I may be the only hug they get that day. I
Yeah.
started with a contract with a foster home.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of initially getting into it. And I had six years old and younger,
Yeah.
and then teenage girls. So, like that
Golly.
was just kind of where I just kind of found my niche. And I see all ages, I'm not saying that, but
Right.
primarily focused in children most of my career.
That's awesome. So what is last question here? What's a side of that career that like many like people don't realize is a part of it? Like something that only you would see to where you're like, man, this is a huge part of it that people don't know either you deal with as a counselor or like just the industry in general. What's something people maybe don't see on the or don't realize maybe?
The effect it has on the therapists themselves
Yeah.
and just the worry. And I'll be honest, I had a parent text me at 11 o'clock last night. I don't really ever get off the clock,
Right,
and
right.
so I answered them back. That's a big deal. And got them the resources, got what they needed, and that's what I do. And boundaries are something as a goal for me. I continue to work on boundaries, but right there,
Yeah,
that's
that's
not
not a
foremost.
boundary.
Foremost is that child. Yeah.
Right, for sure.
Like, yeah, I do turn off like notifications on the weekends. But that's not a boundary. I still check it, and
Yeah.
that's just me because I care.
Right. Right. Just never turns off.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. My mom is a, she's a first grade teacher now, but she's been a special ed teacher my whole life. And
Oh, yeah.
she like talk about caring. Like I not that I personally relate to either of y'all's careers, but just that like there's students that my mom still checks on that like were in school when I was little and I remember them, but she's like, oh yeah, I
Oh
saw the
yeah.
other day that so and so's in a home or like whatever it may look like. She's like, oh
Yeah.
yeah, I still pay attention. And I'm like, golly, how do you do that? She just Some people are just made to
Yeah.
care about others. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I've had clients come back 3, 4 years after we, discharged and they were doing well, but something's come up with their life and they're like, "Hey, I need you again." And I'm
Yeah.
like, "Well, the door's always open."
For sure. That's awesome. All righty, let's kick off with some breakaway stuff. So I know that you've seen success at different levels, right? You've done it all through junior high, college, or not junior high, excuse me, junior rodeo college, and then took a little bit of a break, came back. Talk to me about what it takes to stay consistent as the sports. I mean, it's evolving every day. I mean, literally, Shania just went 1-2 last night in Oklahoma City. I mean, that was
Yeah, that was
bizarre.
amazing.
Yeah,
That
so
was
I'm
amazing.
talking her right after I talked to you. So, but it's grown so much. But as somebody that's kind of seen it evolve, you've gone from the junior level to AMI rodeos in Texas, which really back, I mean, I'm not going to say back in our day, cause that's not what I mean, but there for a while, that's what we had to go to was the AMI rodeos. That was the game. If you wanted to rope calves, you needed to go to the UPRA, CPRAs. That was where the game was at.
That was the highest level we had.
For sure. Like you left college and you could do both, but like from college rodeo to that was where it mm-hmm. was. And so you've made it through all that. Now we've got the PWR, we've got the American that's fixing to go on. We've got PRCA rodeos. I mean, now it has its own finals, but talk to me about what it takes to stay consistent, to keep up with all that. I mean, it's moving Mach 90 at the moment, but
yeah, kind of tell me about how it's a whole different world now. Yeah. The setups are different. They're shorter, they're faster.
There
were 1 second runs. I'm not saying that, but the setups were not made for that. There were a few setups here and there where you're like, oh yeah, you gotta be one to win this. But like on average, the setups were not like that. They are so much shorter and quicker, and girls take so many more chances now.
For sure.
I think because there's so many girls involved. So many girls rope good. They rope good back then. They rope good now.
Right.
But like there's so many more opportunities for young girls.
Yeah.
That I didn't have.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the biggest deal is they're learning to get put in those high pressure situations, fast setups early on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Junior Patriot, you know, and so many different Chris Neal stuff, like mm-hmm. they all have so many opportunities now that we didn't have. And I think that's played a huge role too. And to be consistent now is you got to go.
For sure.
You got to go enter. You got to be in the trenches. You got to go those weekly jackpots, you know, and just be there. But also, the draw plays such a factor in it now.
For sure.
That you got, when you draw one of those five calves, you have to be ready to capitalize on that.
For sure.
And I think the mental game, and that's what I was talking to some girls at San Angelo about, is they're like, man, this is happening. This is happening. I was like, hey, you've got to throw it. You got to take a chance and not let it get to your head. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you're not roping good. It may mean that you're not drawing good or you're having to make something out of nothing.
Right.
And I'm like, you have to take those chances now. And breakaway used to could make pretty runs, but now breakaway to be fast and win, that run's probably not that pretty.
Exactly. Yeah. We're not worried about what it looks like.
No, you know, I guess that's what the fraternities are doing now is you can kind of set it up and make it look pretty. And
right.
You know, traditionally me, I've always used my horse and not my rope.
Right.
I've always had big, strong horses and had the ability to use them more than use my rope. I've never considered myself a reacher ever, but there's been some times I've kind of like, well, here we go. I got to find out,
right.
You know,
yeah,
do I feel comfortable do it? No, I don't feel comfortable in it, but you got to make yourself uncomfortable to get better.
For sure. You know, that's something I for sure want to talk about because, I mean, not to sound like a fangirl, but like your head horses are some of my favorite that I've ever seen.
Thank
and horse
you.
You're welcome. Me and my dad and I talk about it all the time. But like on the head side, and we'll get to this, but on the head side, you can use your horse. Matter of fact, that's a huge part of it, especially for us girls. Like we need to be on the fastest ones there and the stronger ones there because we don't have the range and the ability that some of the guys have. But the breakaway, man, that's just not the case. We can't even hide behind that. Like, if you want to go show, that's fine. But even at the jackpots, you can't do it anymore, you know?
No, you can't. And that's the hard thing is I've always been big about my horse. Like,
right.
I take myself, pride in myself, whether I buy a horse already trained or I'm making myself. Like,
right.
I'm very picky. And sure. I'm very specific about one in the box. And I, you know, and it, you just have to take the chances. And then if something, you got to come back home and then you put them back together, you
right.
get everything back right. And it's in the breakaway, it's just like that. And breakaway horses are different than tie down horses.
For
and
sure.
you know, it's a whole different style now than what it used to be. And
for
I think
sure.
that the horses have changed and, you know, the caliber of horses we have changed too. You know, there's their breeding specifics and there's all these things and these fraternities that are amazing. And mm-hmm. the horse world and the roping world is just changed completely. The Riata's made a huge difference. All these incentives, you know, we're looking at younger horses now and it's, and that's what I'm kind of getting into obviously with my stud is just, you know, trying to do the breeding aspect and crossing him with what I think is good, and that's a whole world I'm learning.
And to learn on the fly. Well, yeah, like
Yeah.
back in the day, I mean, my first, matter of fact, every calf horse I've ever, like breakaway horse I ever owned was an ex tie down horse. But now, and there's nothing, they were great. All of them were great
Yeah.
horses. But like I had one that he almost scored too good. Like he was too honest. And then he would slide
That's
from me to Lubbock. But my God,
yeah.
it would take, that's 3/10 of a second that I just can't. I mean, I fought that all through college
Yeah,
and that's just not the same anymore.
and it's not, and honestly, you don't want a breakaway horse to slide anymore. You want
Exactly.
them almost a little bit tight,
For
you
sure.
know, and that's not my style. I like
Right.
hard stoppers,
I
but you know,
want to be
but you
honest.
know, at 20,
Yeah.
at 20 years old, I was a little bit different probably than I am at 38 now, and several shoulder surgeries and things like that. So, I'm not what I used to be, and that's been a mental part of the game too, is I have to understand, like, I've had injuries, I've had lots of surgeries, I have stuff go on, and I'll never be the same in that sense, and I just have to adapt.
Right.
And you know, at one point I wasn't sure if roping was going to be a thing for me anymore. So
Wow.
it's just you know, just trying to adapt and doing the best I can with what I have and learning to accept that
Yeah,
sometimes. So
for sure. So, what is a non-negotiable in your calf roping that, like, no matter what, this has to be done? Like, I think I know the answer. I'm gonna assume you're gonna say like something horsemanship wise, but like, what's a non-negotiable when it comes to keeping your open good? Something you have to do in order for that, for your run to work.
my horse has to be good in the corner. They cannot be leaning, they cannot be squatting, they have to be. And that's just me, and not everybody's like that. My good horse growing up, he's 34 years old now, I still have him. That if I had him now, I probably would be on the road full time if I had him with the stud and everything and could use them both. But he wasn't great in the corner. He would squat, but from the corner to the cow, I've never ridden anything like him. So, I mean, like, I got by with that. But when I got older and started making my own, you know, I was finding more broke horses. And then, you know, I'm picky and they have to be good in the corner. They can have their things, but, you know, they have to be in your hand and they have to be focused
For sure.
for me.
Yeah. Well, it's too fast for them not to be
Yeah.
ready when you are.
Yeah.
For sure. So I know you talked about it a little bit earlier about how like your head loop, like a head loop versus a calf loop. And my God, we've heard that our whole lives. Like you used to, we were always told like you'd kind of need to pick one because off to the left and dropping it over the right horn, man, that's a super solid loop to throw until you're behind them on the right side. And then that's not super ideal, obviously. But how do you combat that between the two? Like, is it a lot of dummy roping? Like what is something you focus on to make sure that doesn't happen at those events where like PWR, where you are doing both, or even you go to a slack on a Thursday night and then on Friday you're at the 13, you're opening at a Matthews. Like, how do you make sure that doesn't happen?
It's a game of angles,
Okay.
and it's just making sure your angles. But I can tell, like, since I've had so many shoulder issues, like, my shoulder gets tight, and I do have to stretch a lot. I do have to make sure I'm open to rope steers, so that open, and I'm not going front to back, and that I'm, you know, open, and just really a lot of memory. I'll rope a dummy a little bit. I can't rope a dummy a lot because my shoulder gets a hurting too bad. So I have to be mindful of that. And that's another thing of why I don't get to practice as much as I would like to, is I get really sore. And that's just physical stuff. But really just focusing on my angles and where I'm at and where I'm looking.
Yeah, for
Like,
sure.
I know since I rope steer so much now, I have to look farther back on the neck of a calf than I used to,
Gotcha.
because my eyes naturally want to go up higher.
Base of the right horn. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I have to make sure that, like, I have to watch the neck more. You know, like, I
Gotcha.
really, and I tell myself that in the corner when I'm roping calves, like, watch the neck, you know, and watch your spot. And everybody's spot could be different, but that's where I have to tell myself, like, almost deep neck, so I don't go anywhere near. And some of the rodeos up north will have, like, little potentials, and that's what we'll rope. And I
Yeah.
really, really, really,
Oh,
really do
man.
tell myself,
That's
don't
like
wave the
poison.
horns. Yeah, it's, I'm like, you know, always like, man. But because I love roping little horns too.
Right,
And
right.
yeah,
That's
so
a lot
that's
of.
something I have to consciously, mindfully think of.
Gotcha. So, what is something that you think girls right now, Roman Cavs, are kind of struggling with, and how do you think they could work on that? Like, what is something you're seeing as a just as enthusiast of the sport and also a contestant, but what's something you see girls struggle with these days that you think could be worked on?
The longer scores,
Yeah. Gotcha.
I do, and that's something I think is a big deal because I see like my friends' kids or like videos of like these junior opens, and the barriers are so short. We're not teaching them how to see an ear around or a neck rope, and you know, because they're having to go so fast and throw so fast. And I think that's something that I think would be more beneficial is if we had a little bit longer scores places
For sure. Well, I
for the
mean,
younger
it's,
generation.
yeah, for sure. It's one of those things where if you put the foundation of scoring in them, they can always back it off. You can always go faster. But if they don't have their horse in their left hand, like, because I always joke, it just because we were roping, walking fresh calves doesn't mean we weren't going fast. Trust me. Like,
No.
those calves at the
When they
Spicer
figured
Grip
out how to
Arena,
leave,
that's right. On the
they.
second, third runs, like, we were still having to see behind the shoulder because they would leak out. But then when they knew you were back there, man, it was game on. So
Oh
it's not that
yeah.
isn't a fast setup. It's just you got to
Yeah.
score first. So that
Well,
is.
the year I won the Spicer Grip, in the interview I did for the Breakaway Rope and Journal, they asked me about rope and walking fresh calves, and I said my main deal walking fresh calves is rope when you get there.
That's right.
Don't give them a chance to do something because they're gonna do it.
Right.
Like, stay aggressive.
For sure.
And that I think that's the biggest thing is rope when you get there.
Yeah.
And because if you give one of those big ones a chance,
Oh
they're gonna
man.
go somewhere.
Yeah, the second they know they're behind you. Yeah, and but that's tough. Like that's not a setup very many people see. Like
No.
rope, it's almost like I get told a lot in heading to rope going to them, but it's kind of like that. Like you don't get there, let your horse rate, and then rope them. Man, you don't know what they're gonna do.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you know, my dad always told me growing up, take your first and your best shot.
Right.
Like, you know, because if you wait it out, there's no telling what could happen.
For sure.
Taking a quick break from this episode to talk about our friends at Cactus Ropes, trusted by the best in the world for more than 25 years. Built by ropers for ropers, Cactus blends tradition and innovation to create ropes with the feel, balance, and consistency you need when it counts. Check out the Cool Cat, one of Cactus's newest ropes, designed with a smaller diameter and solid weight so you can feel your tip and rope with confidence. Or stick with a proven summer favorite like the C4, built by Trevor Brazil to handle the heat and get better with every run. Check it all out at cactusropes.com. Cactus Ropes, the right rope makes all the difference. Now let's get back into the episode.
So, how do you, we'll get back to the mental side of things. How do you approach the breakaway on the mental side? Like, do you get a little more fired up because it is a little faster maybe than your take four good shots in the team rope inside, or are you try to stay pretty level across the whole thing?
I try to stay pretty level. I probably should get up a little bit more in the breakaway. I think team roping has made me so disciplined that like now I'm teaching myself like, hey, just take a chance. You know, again, you know, I've disciplined myself so much to, you know, stay in my routine. But yeah, I try to stay level, you know, I try to take big deep breaths, always have, you know, and just kind of slow my heart rate and just kind of ground myself.
Gotcha. All righty, one last one for the breakaway. So, if you had any advice for a girl that's maybe roping calves and sees what we know about the team roping, which is like, I love roping calves, don't get me wrong, but you want to go make some money, go be a girl header and get a guy that can catch behind you, and it's game on. So, like, any advice for a girl that maybe is roping calves and wants to start team roping, what would your advice be?
Don't be scared, do it.
Just do it. Love it.
Just do
Yeah.
it.
Both industries are so big. I mean, like they're just both so big. They're the two fastest growing across the sport. So it's silly not to be involved in both
Yeah,
sides,
and
I think.
I love roping calves. I mean, growing up, I had four calf horses. I ate, slept, breathed, rope and breakaway. It was everything to me. And but you know, where my life was and where the sport was, I want to do something different. And I've been to the amateur rodeo finals every year, and I'd been, you know, it just I was like, I felt like at that point I'd done all I can do. And then when the pro rodeo started, Yeah, I got back in that, and I was in the top, 20, 30 of the world those first 3 or 4 years, and then they have so many rodeos now that's not possible
It's
with my
hard to do,
schedule. But yeah, I was all about it then.
For sure. All right, let's switch to the team rope inside.
Okay.
So, and again, not to fangirl, but you are one of my favorite girl headers going up and down the road right now. So,
Thank you.
let's talk about your style. What about your style do you think helps you be successful at a jackpot or World Series or whatever we're talking about?
I think I know how to take the World Series start better than some
Fangirl.
people, because from roping caps from so long, I grew up behind them. I'm aggressive on the start. I'm aggressive on any start, even when it is a regular barrier, in the team roping. I just you have to hit the barrier
For
in
sure.
any sport, in any roping event, or bulldogging or anything. You have to hit the barrier. And I think my style, I'm aggressive, and I can use it if I need to. Like, I can go at one if I need to, but I'm also like, set him up good,
For
get
sure.
him right, and definitely use my horses. Everybody ropes good. Your only advantage is a horse in that sense anymore. And I try to find horses that fit me, or make horses, that fit me. And I have a little bit of both.
For sure.
And all my head horses are kind of different styles, but they work for me right now. I have four. So I really try to push my horse forward and set it up good for my heeler to be able to throw fast.
For sure. So, before we go any further, what are some wins that you've had on the head side that have kind of stuck out to you?
Definitely winning the world in the PWR in 2024. I've had some great all girl wins over the years. I won the Charlie One Horse 1 year. I remember when I kind of stepped away from breakaway a little bit. I just had a young horse, so I was just seasoning him in the breakaway back then. And I said, I want to be one of the best girl headers. I was a number four at the time. And in 2 years, I was a six. And I said that was my goal. And I'm going to tell you, I worked at it. I rode anything you could head on. I was heading on other horses that weren't even head horses. Like, I worked at it. And, I won the regional finals in the shootout at Waco, which was a big deal back then. Those were big deals to win, and I have that saddle, and I remember that being like one of my first really big ones. Like, okay, I'm getting there,
Very
and
cool.
then yeah, and doing that, and then I won the title fights 1 year, which is probably one of the most cool things I ever won, were the boxing
For
gloves.
sure,
Oh my gosh, that's probably one of the coolest prizes I've ever had, are those
Oh yeah.
boxing gloves.
Those are awesome.
And won it with a good friend of mine that year. And
The Arizona ones or the Texas ones?
it was the first year they had it in Texas. It was in Hamilton.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I've won two Heartlands.
Yeah.
I've won a 13 and a 12 Heartland. Those are always neat wins.
For sure.
I've won a lot of just regular World Series qualifiers and
Yeah.
stuff. But yeah, definitely the title fights and that shootout that year was like my first big team roping win.
Very cool.
And
So then from the World Series into the PWR stuff, is there anything you have to adjust like between, and again, not saying that the all girl stuff aren't tough, because obviously they are, but I would venture to say that like a 14-13 at a World Series versus something like the PWR or an all girl, they are different. Like, do you
yes.
adjust anything with your styles? How do you kind of handle the difference between the two?
I have to stay aggressive. I can't let myself back off and think. I just
Gotcha.
have to go at them the same, no matter if, we're at a $100 a man jackpot or we're roping for 300,000. Like, I have to stay the same. And that's my mental game. I don't need time to think. That's why healing kind of drives me crazy, because sometimes I have time to think over there.
Right. That's funny. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you got to do any healing, but
Oh yeah.
that's good. So, back to this question, what is something that in your heading that's a non-negotiable? Like, I have to have this in order for my run to work.
I have to get closer.
Okay.
I can't stay as wide as people like because of my shoulder issues and
Right.
everything. I'll never have the range to the right. And that's where you'll see me struggle, is like if something steps right real hard or runs down the right fence, like I struggle that way. So like I have to get closer.
Yeah. And then what is something that you see other women headers struggling with right now, and how do you think that could be remedied?
Man, there's some up and coming girls I saw from Arizona, young girls that are open really good. I always tell when girls ask for my help or my opinion, I'm like, come rope with me. Because if a guy's helping you, they don't rope like we do.
For sure.
You know, that they have more range. They're taller. They have a more wider like wingspan. I'm like, you come rope with me and let's talk about for me and let's look at angles that way. So I think the biggest deal is just girls using their horses. Use your horse, go one more jump. I think is something, you know, and just girls also having the confidence to enter.
Yeah, for
Like,
sure.
just go
Just
enter.
go. Yeah. There's enough good headers, good girl headers right now that if the young girls don't see it, I mean, they're out there. They're everywhere. I mean, so yeah, let's talk about the horse side. So, we'll get into your stud, but let's start with calf horses first. What, in your opinion, makes a good one? Is it the scoring? Is it flat across the line? What is the key thing that girls need to look for when they're shopping for a good one?
Definitely something that leaves hard and leaves flat. And I have to one that I need one that stays moving, you know, that stays a little bit more honest. That's just my style. I think girls have to find a horse that fits them. And there's not every horse is gonna fit you. And you gotta know, like, hey, this is a great horse, he just doesn't fit me. And I've had to come to that conclusion with calf horses, with head horses, everything. This is a great horse, but just not for
Not for
me.
me. Yeah, for sure. Man, I did that. My good one growing up sounds like the one you were talking about that's 34, but like he was so flat. Score? No, absolutely not. But so flat, he would just leak across the line and you couldn't take him past the third jump, but I had him roped before then. Like that was tried to at least. Well, then when I got into college, I had this mindset of, well, I need one that scores better and runs harder and stops harder. Well, that might have all been true, but he didn't fit me. He never did fit me. Like at the walking fresh stuff, absolutely. Like he was all good. And like a guy could get on him, and like the year they didn't have the college finals, one of my best friends in college qualified for the college finals on that horse. So he was great, but you couldn't pay me to be fast on that horse. You just couldn't. He was so up in the bridle, he was so pushed up in the front end, and it was really cool, and he was really correct. Frankly, I wish he passed away, but I wish I had him now to show him because he was just so cool. But I couldn't get it out of my hand. I went to swinging slow, and so I just wish I would have shopped around for something that was younger that fit me like the horse I knew fit my style because I could go fast. I didn't mind it. I just it was something that I had to kind of adjust. But yeah, for sure, finding one that fits whatever your game is, whatever you want it to be.
And I'm just big on finding what works for you and what fits for you.
For sure.
And that's the main thing. And everybody's style is different. Everybody has a different feel. And that's what makes the world go around. You
For
know, that's
sure.
what I tell even my clients in therapy. I'm like, if we were all the same, how boring would that be?
For sure. For sure.
So it's the same way. Like, everybody's different.
Yeah. And then on the head side, then what are you looking for in one for you? And then what do you think is key? Let's just say for the World Series, because that's kind of what we're talking about. But what are you looking for one in a horse that you could do well on there?
And the me, they got a fire and they got a run. And I like one to drag his leg, not a lot, but enough, and just that I can push forward. That's gonna listen to me and not do whatever he wants, you
For
know.
sure.
And that's my biggest deal is they've got a blast. That's the biggest deal in anything, and scoring or not. And my personal opinion is the World Series barrier is so much harder than the regular barrier. And everybody's like, oh, this World Series, you know, they all have their opinions. I'm like, no, it's harder
For
because
sure.
you have to leave. You have to trust that the steer's gonna leave. And if they don't, you're gonna break it. But you also can't be late and be 10
For
in what I
sure.
rope in.
Yeah, take you out of
So
roping.
it's a fine line, and you just gotta say, well, okay, a good horse will come back and score.
For sure.
You know, and that's the main thing. And it is harder. At least a regular barrier, you could throttle or float, and you
Yeah.
can't at the World Series. You
You can
just
kind
have
of
to
gauge it
trust
a little better.
everything's leaving.
Yeah. Just trust they're
And the
gonna
World
go.
Series, I can cheat the start more on my smaller, shorter bodied horses than I can a bigger horse because their chest is farther away from the eye. So the
Right.
starts are different for me there.
For sure. For sure. So, tell me about some horses that you've ridden over the years.
whether they were with you for a big win or not, doesn't matter, but like that you're like, I'm gonna call them heart horses for lack of a better word, but like those that have stuck out to you that you're like, man, either I wish I had them back, I still have them. What are some of those horses for you?
Yeah, definitely Munchie, the 34-year-old. He was a character, but he was so amazing from the corner to the cow. And I wish I had him, you know, in his prime now. It would be a whole different story for me in the breakaway. I had a big sorrel mare that was a heel horse that I'm kind of, she was green in the head, and I finished her out, and I ended up selling her to one of the open guys. And that was probably one of the hardest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
But she needed to go be more, and I had won a ton on her. Definitely my heart horse is my little bay head horse. And that some people know him and not me.
Yeah. I was like, I know what horse you're talking about.
Yeah. And his name's Tarzan. He's 20 this year. I took the shoes off of him. Aww. I haven't fully come to terms, but he doesn't owe me a dollar.
Yeah.
He's retired. A lot of people will be like, you're the one with the little bay. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. That's
so
me.
Tarzan, definitely. I got him when he was 6. And he was started, but like I kind of had to start over with him.
Right.
And he had some box issues and stuff. And, you know, but he was my hard horse. He definitely, I won hundreds of thousands of dollars on him, won both Heartlands on him. Like he'll live his life here forever. And I had chances, I had blank checks, I had 6 figures, and I told every one of them no, because the thing is, he was my horse. Like he was not great. He does not like men.
Yep.
He is not good. I've let somebody ride him. They couldn't get him in the box one time. Another one couldn't get the bit on him. Like he's just my horse. Mm-hmm. And he's hard to catch. He acts awful.
That's hilarious.
He's terrible to practice on. Like if anybody ever saw me practicing on him, they would be like, that's the biggest piece of junk in the world. But he was better if you just ponied him and took him to the jackpot. And he was a gamer. Like, he's a gamer. And that's definitely my heart horse for sure.
Very cool. All righty, let's talk about your stud. So, Catman Sand, kind of tell me the story of how it came to be that you own him and have him now. Kind of tell me that story for him.
He was not halter broke till he was 4 years old.
Cool.
And then he won like the AQHA World and the tie down when he was 6, I think.
Gotcha.
So a good friend of mine, we've been friends since we were kids. Our dads were friends when they were growing up. Mm-hmm. Jim Bob Fritz, he actually trained Haley Williams Red Light too.
Cool. Yeah.
I had that horse and stuff. But he's always made good horses, and he got him when he was 4 and made him, and I rode him for him 2 years at the Riata in the breakaway.
Mm-hmm.
And just always loved that horse. Like, I just love that horse. And I was going to breed to him last year. I had bought a brood mare, and I was like, I'm going to breed a hopper. And so I was frustrated about something. When I called to get semen for the brood mare, mm-hmm. I was like, why don't you just sell me hopper?
Yeah.
And because I know he turned down some stuff and was thinking about, you know, and he's like, well, let me talk to him. And then he's like, well, the kid said, yes, you can have him.
Just for you.
So I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? So I was like, well, I don't need to try him. I've ridden him. I've run calves on him.
Right.
I steer stopped on him. I'd never headed like a real live steer on him.
Right.
Just steer stopped a couple before the Riata. And I think I'd run breakaway 2 steers on him. That's all I'd ever ridden him. And then ridden him at the Riata 2 years in the breakaway. Like,
how funny.
And I just loved him. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with a stud. And I'll never have another one because he's ruined me because he doesn't act like a stud.
Right.
And like at Andrew's the other day, I was sitting in there on him because I was riding him around. And Kinley Tate rides up next to me, and she's on a mare, and the guy sitting next to her is like, hey, that's a stud. And she looks at him and she goes, that's hopper, we're fine, I promise you. And that mare just reached over and bit him, and he's just like, no, please be my friend. But so I bought him, and kind of the deal was I have to go on with the breeding side of it. Jim Bob didn't want to deal with the breeding stuff and all that. And I'm like, okay, well, I need a Breeding for Dummies book because I don't know anything. But he's super easy to do stuff with. I mean, you head, heel, breakaway, tie down. You can do it all in the same day. He does not care.
Cool.
He has such a great mind, and He just can go for about anything. Like he really doesn't care. You can tie him up places, and somebody tied a mare next to him at the Riata this year, and he didn't even look at her. And I was like, oh my God. Like, don't set him up to fail.
Yeah, right. Don't tie him right next
Yeah, but he was more worried about his best friend, that's the gelding that was standing next to her.
to
So, I mean, yeah, that's not ideal, but realistically, like, he's very, very good minded.
Very cool. So, in your opinion, then, since he is so versatile, how important is it in today's market to have one that you can do anything on? And that's good. I mean, obviously, the good mind, it's the key, but that you can head, heel, rope, calves, do whatever you want on them. How important is that?
I think it's amazing for what horses cost now.
I bet.
Because I have a lot of people now that call and like, hey, I need something I can break away and head on, you know,
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
and I'm like, okay, well, there are plenty that do that, but like, they're like, well, they cost so much now, they need to be able to do more than one thing. And I'm like, I fully agree. Like, I think it's very amazing to have that, but it's not like a deal breaker for me if I'm like, oh, you can only head on this one. Or a lot of them, you can heel on them, but they're not very good, you know? So, but I do think it's really neat when you can do more than one, and I think it really helps them.
Yeah, for
You know,
sure.
when I start horses, they do everything. So, I mean, they go outside, they head, they heel, they rope calves, because you never know what they're going to excel at, and sometimes they just need a break from one or the other.
Yeah, for sure. Keeps their mind always moving too.
Yeah, and you know, I want it to be fun for them. I want them to like it.
Yep. Very cool. So let's talk about, like, I know you said he was in the Ropers Classic, right? And just incentives like that, the Riata, we talk about it a lot. It's the big one for us. But tell me about how these incentive programs, in your opinion, have shifted. I mean, they're shifting everything on the rope horse side specifically. Just kind of tell me about how that's changing and how it's going to help you as now a stud owner.
Yeah, I think it's really changed the whole deal with the rope. I mean, people call me all the time for horses and they're like, well, are they Riata? And I'm like, no, but they're a
No.
really great horse. But
Yeah.
a lot of people are buying specifically for that.
Right.
And you see that a lot. I know we've seen that in the barrel horse world too. And I mean, yeah, the incentives are expensive. I'm, you know, in a great reason. I have several horses that are Riata. One I didn't even know was a Riata till a few months ago.
How funny.
You know, and it just worked out that way for me, but I still buy the horse for the individual horse. And if Hopper had been a gelding, I still would have wanted him because of the horse. I
Right.
didn't, the stud deal is just something else I buy for the horse. But the incentives are making a big deal. A lot of people are breeding towards the incentives. You know, and having him in the Ropers Classic, you know, we thought he was getting in the Riata and then that didn't work out this year, maybe next year. And just because he was the highest money winning horse at the Riata in 2023. So, you know, and that's what Denny Gentry said. He's like, he's the ideal type horse we want,
For
you
sure.
know? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. And I think those incentives are just going to help grow the breeding world in the rope and horse side,
For
because that's not
sure.
something you really ever heard about. I mean, growing up, all I ever heard is you don't want a Hancock. You
Right,
know, that
right.
was
You
just the
don't want
whole
it to buck
thing.
you off, yeah.
You don't want one that's going to buck like
For
that, you
sure.
know? And I've seen some great Hancocks over the years too, but that was just all I remember. And that's really all you really heard about in the rope
Yeah.
horse world was don't get a Hancock, you know, growing up. But now, I mean, it's become like a whole strategy and, you
Yeah.
know, what kind of mares you're crossing the stud on and all the things. And I just think it's just going to continue to grow the market, and the futurities have gotten so big.
For sure.
So I just think it's all this huge change reaction, which I think is amazing for the roping world, because I'm not going to the barrel horse world. That scares me.
No, yeah,
So,
it's scary over there. But it's something they have been doing the whole time. So
yes.
there's really things that they've known for years that they're looking at us going, "You dumb team ropers." Like, we already know that. And we're like, "Oh, my
Yeah, I
bad."
know. And I think we can learn so much from them
For
because
sure.
their breeding's been such a huge part. I don't mind chasing something going fast. I don't want to go fast if something's standing still.
Right, that's right.
So
That's fun.
that's my whole world. I totally respect them. I think they're amazing, but I'm staying where I am.
That's right.
But no, but they know so much. We can learn so much from how they do their incentives and things.
For sure. Well, I kind of crack up, back in the day, they were either papered or they weren't, right? And you either cared or you didn't, but they either had papers or they didn't. Nobody cared what was on them. It was just, are they registered? If not, cool, whatever. We went on about our day. But now, like, all horse ads start with whatever they are eligible for. That's the first line on the ad. Mm-hmm. Regatta eligible, pink, ruby, whatever it may be. That's what's first. And then you go into, hey, by the way, he's won 100,000 this year or exactly. You know, whatever. Like that's the catch is, are they in an incentive or not? And so that's just, and we're no longer asking papered or not. We're asking who they buy. Like, are yes. they a hashtags? Are they a yes. whatever, name one hashtags, just the one that come to mind. But that's totally different about how we're even talking about it. And
yeah, it's totally changed the whole verbiage.
Yep.
You know, instead of people calling saying, hey, I need a really good head horse, but they have to be Riata instead yep. of, hey, I just need a good head horse.
Like, yeah, what do you got that's good? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that's, you know, those incentives are great, but realistically, it's one roping a year.
Right.
So I want to win all year long.
Yeah, I want to win every one I enter.
And that's my mindset. But there's some people that is different. But, I mean, that's exactly, again, what makes the world go round is we're all different. And I think that's what's making this industry grow so much is so many different minds and mindsets
yeah.
and ideas that people are implementing.
For sure. That are coming from other industries too. I mean, we've got huge cow horse influence, obviously. We've got the yes. cutting horse side. We've got the barrel horse side on. We're riding race horses head on, you know,
yeah.
for the run. And so, yeah, now we're just a big old melting pot.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing all these different areas have come together
for sure.
of the horse world.
It's very cool. It's funny that they're all choosing to team rope. That does crack me up, but yes.
Yeah.
They're like, let's just rope. That's easy. I'm like, right. We've been working out our
really
whole lives.
Hard. So roping's hard. That's what I always tell people. I was like, roping's so hard.
It is hard. That's hilarious. All right, one more question on your stud then. What is something that not many people, now that you've owned him and essentially I'm assuming manage him, like, what's something that people don't realize or don't think about when it comes to owning a stud that it's like your new reality of, and I really have to focus on that or think about that?
Stalling.
Okay.
Like hauling, like he's fine, mm-hmm. but like I had a lady put a mare behind him somewhere, you know, and I try to be cautious and she's like, well, are you going to move him? And I'm like, no, I was here first personally. But,
yeah,
you know, I think it's just, you have to be more mindful of, you know, where are you tying him up or yeah. where are you putting, and not so much for him as just the respect for other people. And
yeah,
a lot of times people don't pay attention because he doesn't do anything. If you don't, I mean, he looks like a stud. I'm not saying that, but right. like he's not going to be ignorant acting and make a scene, like, you know, and he has friends. He likes certain friends, but I think that's the biggest thing is just hauling and just, you know, paying attention, like, hey, I need to install. And it's just, you know,
yeah.
You just have to pay more attention in that sense. But I mean, realistically, he acts better than most of my geldings. So. Yeah,
that's funny. Love it. Alrighty, let's talk ropes for a second. You're a cactus girl, yes?
Yes.
So when it comes to ropes, and do you use them for breakaway too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So when it comes to ropes, then let's talk about your head ropes first. What's something you look for in a head rope? Like, why, like, man, I got to have it. I got to have this in my head ropes for me to be wanting to use them. Like, what is that for you and your head ropes?
They need to be smaller.
Okay.
Because my hands are small and then I've had nerve damage and issues and stuff. And yeah. so my hands aren't as strong. And so they have to be smaller. And, you know, Barry really helped me out with that after one of the first surgeries. Like, I basically used a hybrid kid rope and a smaller rope. And, you know, we kind of did that. And then my main thing is they have to have action. Like, they have to be fast. They have to be snappy. I can't have anything that feels big and dull. And I use a little bit more limber rope because it's easier for me because it's hard for me to pick up my first swing. I think that's my biggest struggle. And that's why harder for me now in the breakaway to be as fast because it's so hard with my shoulder to pick up my first swing.
Yeah.
So as long as the ropes are little and light and fast, I'm happy.
Cool. So what are you heading with these days? What do you use?
Right now the futures have been really good for me.
Oh yeah.
I used to use the mini thrills always, but they've kind of stepped away from that one. But the futures mainly right now.
Cool.
They stay consistent pretty all year long.
Yeah, they do, for sure.
We no longer have to switch between them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's always the thing. You got to switch to a C4, but the futures, that's not as big of a thing.
No, they've been more consistent
yep.
all seasons because you never know in Texas, we can have all seasons in 4 and 1 week. So,
that's right.
But But no, that's what I've been doing. And then in the calf rope and the tsunami.
Yep. Great ropes.
Yeah. And then they have a white one too, and I just went blank on the name. But that one too, I use a lot too. So.
All right, a few wrap-up questions here. So you have so many things that you do during a week or month or year or whatever, but how important is it to have good people around you to kind of make the wheel turn and just make it all come together? I mean, what role to have in good people in your life? What role does that play for you?
Oh, your circle means everything.
Yep.
Your circle means everything. You have to have that support rope, and you can't do alone. You yep. know, you have to have those people that pick you up, that, you know, keep you grounded and keep you motivated. And when you're wanting to throw in the towel, cause we've all done it. And, you know, those people that are just there, or just those people to go eat dinner with after yes, the jackpots, or,
sure.
you know, just those people you look for, the people you rope with. I mean, you build so many relationships through the jackpot and rodeo world that are lifelong.
Yep.
And those people show up at different times for you in your life.
For sure. For sure. All right, two more. So what is one piece of life advice? And I don't care if it's roping, I don't care if it's life, whatever it may be, that you've received from someone that has stuck with you for forever.
I definitely live by work and roping is something you do, but it's not who you are.
Love it.
Perfect. And the other motto is second's the first loser, because that's what my dad told me my whole life. Love it. So that's the other
two
one.
Two very different pieces of advice there, but either both are good.
Advice, but like both of them I still live in my, like, that's literally right. like that's.
That's hilarious.
Like, I'm better if you back me in a corner and make me have to be six in a short round than have to go be 10.
Yeah.
Like, that's my mentality. Like,
but if it doesn't work, it's not everything.
No, it's not everything. You know, all my bills are paid. I still get to go eat. Like, it's not like I'm not doing, I do this for fun. It's not. Yeah. So,
perfect.
I mean, yeah, I want to win. I'm so competitive. I want to win no matter what we're doing. I don't care if we're throwing horseshoes at a fence post. Like,
yeah.
I want to win at everything, but it's not just really, in the hindsight, it's not that big a deal.
Gotcha. All right, ma'am. One last one. What are some goals you have across the board? I don't care if it's with your stud. I don't care if it's in your open. What are some of your goals that you have set that you're working towards right now in your life?
I have so many. you know, I want to promote him, and probably need to find somebody to manage and do that full time instead of me trying to see people and send out contracts and right. things like that. So yeah, definitely promote the stud. He deserves it. It has nothing. It means nothing to me. But it is everything for him.
Cool.
And what I want for him. Definitely in the breakaway, you know, I'm just trying to make myself go more. I think my biggest thing is pushing through and being like, yeah, I need to go on this jackpot Sunday afternoon when I'd really like to sit in my recliner, right. you know, and right. like just trying to battle through it. Just trying to push myself more and go more. I'd like to make the circuit finals again.
Mm-hmm.
Go that direction. And just keep, you know, we're always a work in progress. So I'm always working on things. And the head and, you know, really working on some horses. I got a really cool 4-year-old that I want to get to be hauling, you know, mm-hmm. this summer and stuff like that. So I just use the horses as a coping skill.
Nice. Way to go, yeah. counselor.
yeah. They're my coping skills.
Yeah, they're my yeah. coping mechanism. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, that is a wrap for this episode of The Score. Huge thanks goes out to Kaylin for talking to me today, and to our friends at Cactus Ropes for making it all possible. Just like she's been doing for years, go out and get a cactus rope and get after it. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you at the next one.